This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Live from QED in Astoria, Queens, it's Dave Hill, History Fluffer.
All right, thanks you guys for. I'm Dave Hill. Give yourselves a hand. Thank you. And I'm here tonight with my friends, the lovely and talented Jim Biederman, and the lovely and talented Jody Lennon. And so I'm going to hand it over to Jim now, who is the brains behind the operation.
This is You Had to Be There with Dave Hill. Dave Hill has had a long and varied career in show business.
Thank you.
I'm just stating fact.
And
he's had the good fortune to be in the right place at the right time at every moment in his life. Throughout his career, Dave has been, some may say, and by some I mean Dave, a creative midwife.
I don't know if I'd put it that way.
Well, you had mentioned that at one point.
Like a fluffer for creativity, I think. Just being like someone who's there.
Do you want me to change that in the script?
No. Okay. Go ahead.
So a fluffer. What was it?
A fluffer for the creative process. Just fluffer and whatever else you want to add.
Right. How about this? Okay, go ahead. Throughout his career, Dave has been, some may say, and by some I mean Dave.
Yeah.
A fluffer midwife? Would that be?
No, we just covered this. A fluffer.
I'm a little nervous.
All right. Jesus.
An unwitting collaborator? Is that a good?
Yeah.
Right. A muse?
All different ways of saying fluffer for creativity, I think.
And just
for
someone,
the arts.
And just someone you always want around.
Yeah. A good time guy.
Now, some may categorize that as a hanger-on.
Yeah, sure. Jealous types.
There you go. So with this storied and colorful life in the arts, we thought it would be interesting to document Dave's involvement with some of the most influential artists of the past and present, which you've had the pleasure and the luck to know.
Yeah. It's been fortuitous.
So for our maiden voyage, we thought we'd take a look at the year 1978, which I'm sure you remember fondly.
Yeah, some good times back then.
Specifically December 14th, which 1978.
Was...
And when we researched that date, we found out that not much happened on it.
It was a slow news day.
It was very slow. It was Thursday and not Friday.
It was a Thursday, yeah. I was going to say Thursday.
So then we decided to check Tuesday, December 12th. Also not busy.
Day. 2 days earlier.
So we kind of zoomed out a bit more just to go to the whole year to kind of, because it turns out a very slow year. But A Distant Mirror by Barbara Tuchman was a number one bestseller.
Yeah. I didn't see that. Oh, that's a book.
It's a book.
Oh.
Okay. See, that's why I was out. That's why I know.
Video games people were playing. What do you think video games people were playing?
Miss Pac-Man?
No.
Mr. Pac-Man?
No.
Pac-Man?
It wouldn't want to be Pac-Man. Family.
Space Invaders, 78. It would be Asteroids.
Close.
Galaga.
Close.
Space Invaders.
No, you already said that. Frogger.
Oh my God. That's a horror. You couldn't get away with that now. A game that kills frogs. No. But back then, go for it.
So musically, a lot of things happening.
Musically, yeah.
Probably one of the biggest acts of all time. On the verge of their finality, for the time being at that time.
Yeah.
The Eagles.
Yeah.
They have sold more records than the Beatles.
They sold a lot. Yeah.
That's a technical term.
Yeah. No, but it's millions.
Hundreds of millions.
Hundreds of millions.
More than Elvis. More than the Beatles. I personally can't stand the Eagles.
I love the Eagles.
Wow. I love the Eagles. We should find out where does everyone fall in the Eagles pro con. Who likes the Eagles? Who is
raise a talent if you're into the Eagles.
Who doesn't like the Eagles?
Wow.
Okay.
Oh, fuck off. Well, it's funny because a lot of people don't realize this, but the Eagles, primarily, you know, the various lineups, people think of the five Eagles, but I was, for a time around this period that you're discussing in 1978, I was known as the sixth Eagle. The joke was always, I'm not the sixth Eagle, I'm the seventh Eagle, because as everyone knows, the sixth Eagle is cocaine. That's what that was the joke that we had.
There's a joke with that.
Yeah. But me and the guys would always say, and you're very, it's very funny. A lot of people don't.
You are being so modest right now. The guys are. Who are the guys?
Yeah.
Don Henley. Glenn Frey.
Right.
Joe Walsh. Don't try to out name my bandmates.
Kind of. Joe fucking Walsh.
And Don Felder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And then Randy Meisner, of course, on bass.
On bass.
So those are the guys that you're the guys,
your the guys,
your friends.
But well, you know that there we get into a bit of a gray area. But I was actually in San Diego just prior to this period. I had gotten involved with sort of a club. A lot of people refer to it as a cult that I was in because we all wore matching gowns and had ritualistic sex acts and we set a lot of stuff on fire. But it eventually ran its course, as that stuff always does, and I headed north to Los Angeles. And I was, around this time, December 14th, 1978, I was wandering through Laurel Canyon. It might have been Beechwood Canyon or Laurel Canyon. Basically, one of the canyons out there today. One of the canyons that they have out there.
You're probably in Runyon Canyon.
Right. It could have been. I was just sort of wandering through with my acoustic guitar and a bottle of tequila when I happened upon Don Henley, Glenn Frey, and Joe Walsh.
Whoa.
And and they're all shirtless.
Where? How?
They're up on one of the I think I was up on a rock, sort of like looking out in a,
with your guitar.
Yeah, and it had a,
it's kind of strapped on his back.
Yeah, and it was just,
are you topless?
When I saw them with their shirts off, I took my shirt off. Because I was still wearing everything I owned from
the
bus.
Or the gowns from San Diego.
Yeah, I had the gowns and a down jacket that I had worn up on the Greyhound.
It can get pretty chilly up in those mountains.
Yeah, it was, and so I was walking in it, and I saw them, and they were kind of doing this harmony thing, where Don Henley was doing the one. Does anyone know music theory here? Mm-hmm. So you know the one, mm-hmm. right?
He's going to talk just to you now.
So the one, so Don's doing the one, Glenn is doing the third, and Joe is doing the fifth. So you have the one. What would the third be? So you do the one.
One.
No, you don't say the number one. You do a And now over here, sing the third to that music person. No, you're just singing the same note. That's still the one. No, someone do the third. I'll say you. I'll do the third. Okay.
One.
No, you don't move to the third. You stay on the one. Anyway, and then there's the fifth. Anyway, so Joe's doing this. So I come in with this thing. I hit the seventh, right?
But
I keep going between the seventh and the octave because I'm admittedly hammered at this point, right? And the guys overhear this and they get a little scared. And they're like, what the fuck was that? That was incredible. And I was like, yeah, I know. And I hand over. I was at the time going through about, what's it called? A finger or a handle? What's it called? Jim, you drink a lot. What's it called?
Fist?
When you have a bottle of liquor.
Handle.
A handle of tequila. And I said, hey, my name is Dave. And you must, and they were, I'm Glenn Frey from the Eagles. And
does he, and I don't mean to be insulting here, but is that how he introduces himself?
He said, "I'm Glenn Frey from the Eagles." And then the other guys, because they're so competitive, mm-hmm. then Don Henley says, "I'm Don Henley from the Eagles."
Right.
I have a question. Weren't they like way into just calling themselves Eagles mm-hmm. and not the Eagles?
That's a very funny story, actually. When we, later on, I'm just sort of jumping ahead, we were going to make t-shirts because I was like, let's do this, let's try, you know?
Merch.
So, yeah, let's make shirts. And we went to the printing place and it was just more cost effective to have it be Eagles. Instead of the Eagles.
So again, I'm not in any way being disrespectful. One of the top grossing acts of all time is trying to save money on their t-shirts.
Well, you know, it's sort of a robbing Peter to pay Paul move. I'm not sure what that means, but
so it sounds like almost like, so it's almost like a Ponzi scheme, basically.
Right. It just seemed like the guy was like doing the breakdowns for the shirts and the size and stuff. He's like, well, you know, double XL costs a little more.
Wait, I gotta know. You said you were Don. He said he was Don Henley
from the Eagles.
From the Eagles.
And then so Joe Walsh is like, I'm Joe Walsh from the Eagles, but I've also had a really great solo career already, and I was in James Gang. And anyway,
that's right.
Which sort of upset the other two guys. Anyway, so they were like, hey, we were wondering if you would be in the Eagles. And I said, sure, don't you need to check with Don Felder and Randy Meisner to get there, see if they're cool with it. And Don Henley says, it's very funny, he says, fuck those guys. And which really gave me a window into sort of their whole dynamic.
Now,
yeah,
because they're famously very what's the word, belligerent.
They're fuckers. They're real fuckers. They're very
and not only with each other, but with and outwardly as well.
Everybody, like we would go later that day. Actually, we went to Denny's. And, you know, Glenn Frey was like, can I give me the Grand Slam? And it's 3 in the afternoon at this point. And we're like, well, we don't do the Grand Slam after 11. And he says, fuck you, I'm Glenn Frey from the Eagles. And I want the Grand Slam breakfast.
Right.
And so he does it. And then Don Henley, you can see with his good, I want the Grand Slam breakfast as well. And and then Joe just had a grilled cheese, I don't know. Anyway, but my point is, so I hung out with them, and that, you know, they gave me some of their stash, and we just stayed up drinking. After we went to Denny's, we went back to Runyon Cannon, and we just stayed up all night drinking and just harmonizing and doing all, you know, kind of getting in the zone of being the number one selling soft rock album, a band of the 70s and of all time, really. And so anyway, the sun is coming up. And I say, wow, I guess you could call this a tequila sunrise, right? And
no, can I say something? No, you didn't.
No, I didn't. No. Glenn Frey, very quickly, he's always doing this. Whenever I'd say something, he'd write it down. He'd scribble it down. Yeah. And he just scribbled it down and just put it in. I'm like, why are you writing down everything I'm saying? And he's like, nothing. And then, so anyway, we walk, we just so we're like, ah, let's get out of here. We're going back to the van that they had parked nearby. And the bottle of tequila is funny. And Don Henley's like, hey, give me that thing. And he whips it at this house he swore was David Geffen's house. He just whips it right through the window. And Cher was like, what are you guys doing? So that was sort of the beginning of it all for me.
Now you, again, you're modest.
Yeah.
You.
I had to be. I mean, someone had to be.
Look, there's these guys. These personalities are bigger than, they're larger than life.
Yeah. Right. From, you know.
And so you're the quiet.
The quiet storm.
Sixth Eagle. Seven.
Sixth Eagle, technically seventh Eagle, right. For the okay, joke that we had.
Okay.
Yeah.
Quiet Eagle.
Yeah.
Quiet Eagle. Thank you. But so, for instance, Tequila Sunrise, obviously Don Henley stealing your.
Well, that was this, but you know, It was like, actually, because the next day, we sleep it off.
What is the sleeping arrangement in
the canyon? We were at Big Sur. Really stupid, but we drove up to Big Sur for the night. And there's No, it was dumb, and it was made it a pain to get back to practice. So we get up there, and then we're going to be like, well, we got to get back for practice at 4, dumb.
Had you guys put your shirts back on, or were you all
reluctantly.
Still...
Well, when we went into Denny's, we had to put shoes and shirts.
Oh, they had that rule
No service. That's exactly right.
Oh.
Right.
You're driving up to Big Sur to crash, which is
to crash
about 3 hours north.
No, when I hear it out loud like this, it sounds
crazy,
really
right?
Stupid.
Right.
But at the time, it made sense.
Right. This is a drug-fueled, alcohol-fueled, creative.
And who's driving? Yeah. Is it Joe Walsh driving?
I picture
Joe Walsh driving. Joe, and in control of the radio.
Joe drove and Don controlled the radio. Which, when by say controlled, I mean he insisted we keep it off the whole drive, just so he could sing his bullshit. And I said to him, I said, "What's up with this guy? He seems like a real desperado." Yeah. And Don Henley starts scribbling. I'm starting to see a trend.
I mean, look, Don Henley, whatever. But this is not a great man if he's essentially just stealing your idea.
I never had proof of, but it just seemed like weirdly coincidental. It was the next day he's behind the piano. Hey, what are you working on over there, Don? When she's down. And anyway, so we go to practice the next day.
Uh-huh.
And I walk in, because I want to be kind of Switzerland with all this. I know the whole drive back down from Big Sur to practice, they're just like, Donfeld is a piece of shit. Randy will do whatever the fuck we ask him to. And,
Dan, Ron and Dan are not there.
Don and Randy were waiting for us in the parking lot. Randy is very funny. He was waiting for the studio door to be unlocked because he'd been waiting for a really long time, and he had to go to, and he said, "Can you open the door? I need to take a leak." And I'd say, "Only if you say, please." Take it to the limit.
I got it.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Take it to, please. It's a very high, only he could hit that note.
Right.
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah, eventually. That's actually one of the reasons he got kicked out of the band. This is true. You can look this up. Because they were like, he didn't want to sing that note.
Right, it was hard
for
him to sing.
Yeah, because it goes. I mean, you can even hear me all these years later. I have trouble hitting it. Do
you
hear how
I
didn't quite?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but that's training and years of muscle memory thing. Yeah. But so we get in. We finally get in practice. And I all things being equal, I want to get along with everyone in the band. I dump out like a huge bag of cocaine, just everywhere, and everyone's having at it like it's Christmas morning with a bunch of children, and so then I just walk up to Glenn Frey and I just punch him right in the face.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Don Felder and Randy, my big laugh, and then I say. And Don, and Glenn Frey is flat on his back, and still the cocaine strong is still out of his nose. And he says, "What'd you do that for?" And I said, "Glenn, there's a new kid in town." And he scrambles. He scrambles to write down what I just said as well.
Yeah. Do they all have pads and pencils at all times? Is that...
Well, pretty much the main three. Guys did all the time. Whenever I was talking, Randy Meisner did not. Don Felder didn't. But the other guys.
Was Patty Davis around at all?
She was in the next practice spot. Yeah.
Oh.
It's not key to the story, but yeah. Wait, which Patty Davis are you talking about?
Well,
from My Three Sons?
Ronald Reagan and
yeah,
Nancy
Ronald
Reagan's
daughter.
Oh yeah, yeah.
She was dating Randy Meisner.
Oh, you're talking about Patty. Brandy's Patty. Yeah, yeah. She was around.
It's Patty with an I.
Yeah. Okay, now it's Patty with an I. Yeah. She was back. She was around a lot.
So I didn't know if she was around. I know she sang some backups on a couple things.
And I'm wondering.
Sang is a, in quotes.
Oh. Yeah. Was she the Linda?
That would be giving her a bit too much credit, as I recall.
And now, so you bring up cocaine.
I did a lot more than that with it, Jim. Yeah.
I mean, I figured. But you mentioned cocaine.
Yeah.
And obviously a big part of the scene in the time.
Joe Walsh and I'd say if we had to say who were the big fans of cocaine, like do we, because as things heated up, we actually had gold-plated Coke straws made. Mm-hmm. And sure. Then the gigs, as the, sort of everything was growing and we were turning this bigger and bigger band, before each show, after soundcheck, just a dump truck of cocaine would pull up to the backstage area, and Joe and I would just dive in like a couple of hillbillies into a haystack, and just start. To, we would make sandwiches out of this stuff. We would put cocaine in between two slices of bread, and just believe the first few bites disgusting. Uh-huh. Third bite, that's the best sandwich you've ever had in your life.
Wow.
Oh, 1978.
Yeah. But now you, we were again talking backstage. Mm-hmm. You had mentioned that it was the coke that kind of got you, I guess, and Joe. You kind of would hang out with what was the beginning of Fleetwood Mac at that time.
Yeah. It's very funny because a lot of people don't know this, but I was actually.
Are you doing coke now?
Am I doing coke now?
You were doing a little cokey.
I had a nostril here.
Yeah.
Do you find this? I get not like I, my nostrils grow faster with each passing week.
Don't dodge the Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, okay, tell us about the cocaine.
So basically, I did have a dalliance with Fleetwood Mac. They, because a lot of people think Fleetwood Mac, they think Stevie Nicks, Christine McVie, John McVie, Mick Fleetwood, Lindsey Buckingham, right? That's the classic lineup.
Right. Yeah.
But before that, there was like a lot of other people in the band. Bob Welch, Peter Green. Anyway, sort of after Bob Welch left and then Lindsey Buckingham, Stevie Nicks joined the group, they were like, it's like not working out that well. And I get a call from Stevie Nicks and they're like, you should come over here.
Did she know you or did she just call you?
I think word was out about me
about the Eagles, yeah.
And she's like, how soon, you know, she's like, we're down at the studio, you know, we're trying to work some stuff out, so how soon can you get here? And I was just like, open the door. And she opens the door at a payphone actually in the parking lot, and she's like, that was weird. And I was like, yeah, I kind of thought so too. Anyway, but and I go in and Mick Fleetwood is also in a huge pile of cocaine.
Oh, so right away, kindred spirit.
Yeah, I was like, well, this is going to work out just fine. And and then Stevie Nicks was she's like, hey Dave, do you ever do that thing that I like to do where you do the cocaine up your butt, you know? Did you ever hear this about Stevie Nicks? The rumor that they would blow cocaine up her butthole because she, and so she says, hey Dave, did you ever try doing cocaine up your butthole? And I said, it's very funny. I said, is there another way? Yeah. They got a big laugh
right,
out of it
right
too.
Away, I bet.
Yeah.
Right away, you're in.
Yeah.
You're in the group.
They got a big charge out of that.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is strange. You said actually because now her it was, I guess her septum was destroyed. Was that?
And was her leather Cheerio destroyed at all?
Leather Cheerio.
What is a leather Cheerio? Is that
that's a butthole. Is that a butthole?
Yeah.
The leather. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Leather Cheerio.
Isn't that what everybody calls it?
I've never heard.
Is that honestly what you're calling a butthole? A leather Cheerio.
It is.
Because I'm gonna say that about 700 more times tonight. If that's what you're talking about.
Sorry. Yeah.
A leather Cheerio. I've never heard that.
A leather Cheerio.
Asshole.
That's the competition killer, I think. Leather Cheerio.
Yeah.
I'm like reshaping my whole night based on learning that phrase.
So you're quite.
I'm not even talking about this show. I'm talking about everything I'm doing later tonight.
But you're saying that you heard that her leather Cheerio had collapsed?
Yes.
To cocaine use?
Her delicate leather Cheerio.
You had heard that.
Been compromised.
Well, you know, it sounds like
it was a spy.
Her leather
Cheerio was a spy. It had been compromised.
That's my password. That's my password, by the way.
Leather
Cheerio has been compromised. Certain parts of that are capitalized, and then I add dollar sign and an exclamation point.
So you're. Let's get back to. I guess we can get back to the story.
I don't think we'll ever fully be back to anything. Ever again, after
there you are.
Cheerio.
You're with Fleetwood Mac in the studio.
Yeah.
I'm assuming she's on all four. Is it all fours that she does?
When was she not? No. No, it would always be this joke. Like, she'd be like, oh, this needs like a little more reverb. And she would move forward. And that was the cue. She would be kind of reaching on the console. And that was like, I'll be right over. But to be fair, she did. It wasn't just coke she did up. She took her meals up her butthole. Everything was done up her butthole. And soon, you know, we all followed suit.
Sure.
And by we, I mean just you, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
An amazing. Did you help with any of their music or no? Or was more just a...
Just all of Rumors. But that's it. Just all of Rumors.
I guess that's impressive.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's all. That's the only one I really did everything on.
So now. I have to say, first of all, you look amazing for your age.
Well, it's not the years; it's the miles. Yeah.
You're going back and forth. You're almost bi-coastal at this point. So now you've got the Eagles and Fleetwood Mac on the West Coast, and you are hanging out with who?
Warhol. I lived at the factory. I had at the time I had a cash flow issue, and which resulted in me having to go back and do a lot of posing work for like art school stuff.
Sure,
just posing classes.
Hourly.
It was hourly. It was just weird. On the one hand, I'm in one of the biggest bands in the world, and on the other hand, I'm sucking dick for $9, so, you know.
It was the time. It was the time.
It was a weird time.
So you're as you, I think, eloquently, poetically say, sucking dick for $9 an hour.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, this is a figure of speech.
It wasn't a figure. It was or wasn't?
It's a figure of speech, but it's also exactly what was happening.
But can you paint a picture of what $9 could buy at the time?
Yeah, that's with inflation, that's got to be $11.
You could get a townhouse. Yeah, on Fifth Avenue.
Wow, it's crazy.
No,
well, New York was bankrupt, so that makes sense.
It was Ed Koch was mayor.
So you're coming back and forth between Los Angeles and New York,
and you're sucking dick for $9,
figuratively, and but also to be clear, literally.
what's the difference between, like, what would you say, like, kind of tonally? It's obviously different, but what was it like to be going from, in essence, I guess, you know, anything you want, cradle of wealth and cocaine and leather Cheerios, to sucking dick for $9 an hour? You can say it
figuratively, but also that was quite literally.
That was hourly.
It was hourly.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah, no, I would have to ice my jaw.
You don't want to get dry socket.
No. Wait, what?
Wait. Dry what?
Dry socket?
What do you mean?
That sounds like when you take like a fake eye out or something.
No, it's like if you get your a tooth out, and then you want to... don't want to do any extreme sucking. Mm-hmm. Draw hard on a straw because you could get dry socket. You want to keep the area moist.
By the way, because I guess when you take the tooth out, the saliva's not...
Right, you got to heal. I have a question about the shoes you were wearing on both coasts.
Yeah.
What shoes were you wearing on both coasts in 1978?
Oh, they were sort of just like they had large heels.
Nice.
Because the guys in the band, the Eagles that I was in, they would always have me standing in the back. They were like, "Go in the back. Let the lights really hit you. You know, like let everyone see you." And they'd be like, "Stand behind the drum riser. That's a good spot." And so
wait, they kept telling you to go back to the back.
Further and further. This was sort of the beginning of the end.
Right. Let's talk about the end a little bit. There's a breakdown.
Yeah, there was.
None of you liked each other.
No.
You all hated each other.
Well, we all... the only thing that kept us... The only thing... You know, every day when I walk into practice, I would walk up and I would punch Glenn Frey right in the fucking face. Every single
time.
He
didn't even get... Like, he didn't expect it?
It was more like a thing of, like, let's get it over with. Turn the PA on, punch Glenn Frey in the face. He, you know, there was no... getting out of it, and you know, but Don Felder and Randy Meisner were like, "Can't you ever punch Joe Walsh and Don Henley in the face? Why is it always Glenn?" And I tried to explain. I was like, "There's just something funnier to me about punching Glenn Frey every single day." And
and him actually taking it.
Yeah, you take it, and he was like, "You know, I punch him like, how's that for a peaceful, easy feeling, you piece of shit?" Stuff like
now,
that.
You raise.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, you raise an interesting point. Glenn Frey wasn't a nice guy, right? I mean, it sounds like this is a band full of assholes.
Well, not compared to Glenn Frey.
The rest of them were.
They were all great. Yeah. I mean, and Glenn, to his credit, was sort of a salt of the earth guy in his own. If by salt of the earth you mean a huge fucking prick, then yeah, he was as well.
So I'm going to guess the rest of the band actually kind of passively enjoyed you walking in, turning the PA on and punching.
I think they got a charge out of it. Yeah.
So this does not sound, I'm going to be honest, it doesn't sound like a healthy relationship. It doesn't sound like something you should really hang out too much longer in.
No.
Tell us what's happening. What's going on in your head? Are you thinking,
I mean,
maybe
it's
I
still
move
December
on?
14th, 1978.
Yeah, so the longest day of my life.
And it's not even the longest day of the year. That's the weirdest part.
I'm thinking, you know, I'm starting to think maybe it's time to go.
You're not happy. They're not happy with each other.
I would even argue, you know, if I'm being honest, I don't know if they were entirely happy with me at this point either.
You're looking back on this now and thinking, is that the door closed on this? Is the book closed on this? Is the chapter closed on this?
For me, in terms of my relation to it, I would say yes, because then after that I worked in sales in Toledo, Ohio.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I was right,
so
a rep.
So you're one day punching Glenn Frey. Again,
yeah,
again.
On top of the world.
Yeah, on top of the world. You're doing something with Stevie Nicks'
buttocks.
Buttocks. And
by buttocks,
her asshole.
Her asshole.
And you are.
And I don't mean Lindsay Buckingham. Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, by the way, good clarification. And you decide. You wake up. I'm trying to picture this in my head. You wake up one morning. Beautiful or not, Los Angeles canyon morning. I'm assuming you're still sleeping in the canyon.
I was sleeping in Joe Walsh's van.
In Joe Walsh's van. You wake up, you look out the van window, beautiful Los Angeles, and you say, "Fuck it, I'm going into sales."
Yeah, I had seen a Craigslist ad I was a regional sales rep for Cisco.
But so, were you invited to Glenn Frey's funeral?
Yeah.
I gave the eulogy at Glenn Frey's funeral.
You did.
A lot of people don't know that.
No, I would say a lot of people
It was
don't.
Not the funeral that most people attended and where Glenn's body was.
I mean, it was like another stage.
Well,
that was the
decoy funeral, because you know you get to that level. Yeah. So the body, most of the other Eagles, his family, and everyone was at that one, and then.
And so who was it yours?
Yeah, where
I
were
was
you?
Mine was in Bayonne, New Jersey.
Yeah, that's a little far away.
Yeah, well, not from. It was convenient for me.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So you're giving the eulogy to, I don't know who you're giving it to.
My friend Ron, and his sister Karen.
Had the family? Was this just you thinking, or was this like something you felt you needed to do, or had the family?
I needed closure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the guy you punched in the face for every day.
Yeah.
Repeatedly.
Lovingly.
Lovingly.
Not out of love for him, I love doing it.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't putting a negative spin on it.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
So this is the guy you punched in the face in the nose every day.
Every single day. Well, sometimes I would go, you know, he'd be like, not the eyes. I'd be like, Glenn, you can't hide your lion eyes. Yeah. We had a lot of fun. It was good times and bad times.
Apparently.
Yeah.
What would you say was what was your send-off to this guy you punched in the face every day?
I'd say, heard from me first season, he was a fucking prick.
Is that your opener?
Yeah. Well, that was the closer as well.
The closer.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very short eulogy.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he was on, what was that show? Miami Vice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I talked about that a little bit.
See, you called him.
It doesn't really sound like you have much to say about the guy.
No, I think I got a lot of traction on the Miami Vice.
Sure. I mean, it was on for 7 seasons. So.
Yeah, no, people had a lot of follow-up questions about that. So.
There were follow-up
Ron's
questions?
Ron's sister had some questions about it.
We were at lunch.
Oh, because it'd be weird to have follow-up questions at a eulogy.
Well, that was where the eulogy was.
Oh, was it lunch too?
Yeah.
Where? What was the restaurant?
Chili's.
Oh. Yeah. I thought they closed that one, but all right.
No, it was there.
So you're giving Glenn Fry's eulogy at a Chili's,
yeah.
And it's Ron, his sister
Karen,
whoever works at Chili's.
And to be honest, we were just mostly talking about Miami Vice.
Yeah.
I don't even remember Glenn coming out that much other than the initial.
It's
so
amazing.
It's possible that it was just a conversation about Miami Vice and
we all have our own truths. I think
it's true.
No, we did talk about Glenn a little bit.
Good.
Alright.
I just have one question.
Sure.
Like, when was the last time you did cocaine?
What time is it? Well,
do you want to say one more thing? You want to close it up?
No, I think that's a good, we're at a good, we should free these people.
Yeah.
Does anyone have any questions before we,
This is the Glenn Fry eulogy, question follow-up. Yeah.
I have a question. Was it weird when you brought up the title Desperado in 1978 when they had a hit song by that same title like 4 years before that?
Yes and no. This may have been 73. We've been getting this wrong.
Oh,
it was
no.
73,
wait.
Actually.
I did all the research on 73.
No, I was out there in 73.
Oh.
Yeah. All right, let's take it from the top.
Good question.
What's your secret to longevity, Dave?
That's a very good question.
Yeah. Cocaine. Thank you for joining us for this experiment in time. Jim Biederman, everybody. Jody Lennon. Give yourselves a hand. Thank you to Chris Kirk.
And Dave Hill.
Dave Hill, History Fluffer, is recorded live at QED in Astoria, Queens. For tickets and more information, visit QEDAstoria.com. For early access to ad-free episodes of Dave Hill History Fluffer and other incredible podcasts, become a Patreon subscriber for just $5 a month. Visit patreon.com/Dave Hill to join.
If you're true.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.